This episode was paid in full by DTN Progressive Farmer. The February WASDE switches focus from the crop that was to the crop that's ahead in 2024, and concerns are already rising as the Latin American weather picture seems poised to tighten global corn supplies. How might that international picture shape U.S. planting decisions? That's today on Field Posts. This is a DTN Progressive Farmer podcast that dives deeper into the most important trends in agriculture to explore the business's cutting edge. I'm your host, Sarah Mock. The February WASDE dropped Thursday, February 8th, and despite being a relatively quiet report, it still sent shockwaves through commodity markets as USDA diverges from Brazilian officials and its estimate of Brazilian crop figures. The result? Some confusion about global corn stocks and some hope that Latin American competition might not be too fierce in 2024. DTN's lead market analyst Todd Holtman joins us today to offer his insight on the latest figures, as well as how a shifting global weather forecast and rapidly evolving security situation on two continents may affect ag markets in the month to come. We'll dive into USDA's perspective on export action, then dig into the ethanol and crush pictures in light of the complex global energy situation. Then we'll check in on the wheat and livestock markets with analysis on how the department is tracking wheat's tough supply and demand picture and whether tightness in the cattle markets will persist. We'll talk through the current basis picture, concerns about Chinese demand, and look ahead to what could influence prospective planting right after this word from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by MyDTN. In today's environment, it's essential, more than ever, to get the most current and accurate information to help save your valuable resources and continue to be profitable. Get access to all the information you need to deal with this change from DTN. As the leading independent, trusted source of actionable insights and market information, MyDTN gives you accurate weather forecasts, the most extensive database of grain bids, and the most timely news and analysis from our award-winning news team. These features and more are available 24/7 via desktop, laptop, and any mobile device to be with you on the go. Learn more at mydtn.com and start a free 14-day trial. Now, back to the show. DTN lead analyst Todd Holtman joins us today to discuss the latest news from the February World Agriculture Supply and Demand Estimates. Todd, tee us up here with what you were expecting going into this kind of midwinter report.
Sure. Well, Sarah, usually February WASDE reports is not a lot to talk about, and I think this report probably lived up to that. The main attention of the day is going to be on the South American forecast. It's a time when Brazil is harvesting its soybean crop and planting corn right behind it. We also have a crop growing in Argentina, so that seems to be where most of the attention is these days while we go through our winter here in the U.S.
Let's get right into some of those numbers. Talk to us a little bit about world stocks for corn. What did USDA have to say in terms of updates?
That was a pleasant surprise, actually. USDA reduced the world-ending stocks estimate for corn from 325.2 million metric tons down to 322.1 million metric tons. Basically, it all came down to one estimate change, and that was the corn production estimate for Brazil. USDA lowered that from 127 down to 124 million metric tons. That's not as low as many people would like to hear, but it was a 3 million metric ton reduction and did explain most of the day's change in the corn stocks.
Talk to us a little bit about that stock picture overall and where we are globally as far as stocks go on the corn side. Anything optimistic to tell us about that picture?
Optimistic? No, I wouldn't describe it as optimistic. Overall, Sarah, if we look at the traditional ending stocks that I just quoted at 322, that's the highest world ending corn stocks in 6 years. So that's a pretty plentiful supply, and that's difficult for prices to argue with too much. Now, personally, I like to take China out of the equation of that for two reasons. One, USDA has an ending stocks estimate for China that I think is higher than reality. It's somewhere around 7.5 to 8 billion bushels, and I just don't think China has that amount on hand. The other reason I'm comfortable leaving China off is because they really don't export much corn. They're still a net importer. Even though they produce a lot of corn, they're much more of a buyer than a seller on the market. So if we look at the ending stocks excluding China, that also fell 3 million metric tons today, and that is the highest in 5 years. So either way we look at it, corn supplies are pretty plentiful around the world.
And then we have this kind of Latin America picture. You mentioned just now the kind of change in stock for Brazil, but give us a perspective here on how things might be shaking out for Brazil and Argentina as we look maybe a little bit ahead for the rest of this season.
Yeah, I should say that USDA was not the only entity making estimates here on Thursday. Earlier this morning, Brazil's crop agency, CONAB, also made their own corn production estimate for Brazil, and they came in at 113.7, which is roughly 4.5 billion bushels. Now, that's significantly lower than USDA's 124 estimate. And honestly, given all the weather challenges that Brazil has had this year, not only with the safrinha crop that they're about to plant, but the first corn crop, they lost a lot of acres. They lost acres to flooding in southern Brazil. And they also had the hot and dry problems in central Brazil. Given all the things that are happening locally in the country, I think more people are probably going to say that CONAB is the more credible estimate, and we scratch our heads at why USDA stands so high on both corn, and we'll see this problem repeated when we talk about soybeans.
Talk to us a little bit about the demand picture. What does this mean for ethanol trade? Oh. Is there some kind of big pull that USDA is expecting on the other side of this higher world stocks figure?
Okay, sure. The good news for our U.S. markets is that we have three pretty solid legs of demand for corn that are actively working right now. Even though our cattle inventory is going to be 2% lower this year, there's a lot of active feeding going along in the feedlot areas and in places of the country where you see high cattle production, you're seeing cash corn prices trade above the futures market. So you see a very strong basis in livestock areas this year. That's one good leg of demand for our U.S. corn. Another is ethanol production. Now that corn prices are closer to $4 than they are $6, the margins at the ethanol plants are doing very well. We're seeing almost a $2 spread between corn's processing value at an ethanol plant and the actual cost of cash corn in the country. Thanks to that, we're seeing ethanol production up roughly 4% this season versus a year ago. And then finally, export demand is also doing pretty well for corn. Last year, our export sales and movement really suffered, but this year we're up 31% from a year ago. And I'm talking about actual shipments, not just the sales. But we're not quite to the four-year average, but obviously much better than a year ago. Currently, Ukraine has the cheapest corn price in the world. Of course, they can only ship out limited amounts. Compared to Brazil and Argentina, the U.S. is still the cheaper corn option on the export market. But of course, when Argentina's harvest comes due in roughly late April and May, their prices are probably going to be more competitive at that time. And then Brazil's going to follow in July when they come in with their big safrinha crop.
We've talked a couple times in the last few months about that competitive pressure from Latin America. And I think in the more past, the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere swapped kind of seasons. And there was 6 months of the year when U.S. producers or Northern Hemisphere producers really dominated the market. And then it switched to the Southern Hemisphere. But it seems like those seasons are really blending on the edges a lot more. And we've talked about the risk of Brazil and Argentina really being able to be kind of year-round suppliers and being cost competitive much more of the year. Does this, at least for this coming year, does the kind of updated production figures out of Brazil give you some hope that maybe we might not have to deal with this quite yet?
Yes. To get to the point, the answer is yes. And typically, I'll say, usually our export pace in corn starts to slow down roughly early to mid-June. And of course, that's just when the Safrinha crop in Brazil is starting to come online and they're getting a better idea of just what harvest is going to look like. So far, we seem to be in line for that normal pattern on corn, is the good news. I think it's also encouraging that this year's corn crop in Brazil looks like it's going to come in, I think, less than USDA is saying right now, and I think closer to the CONAB number of close to 4.5 billion bushels. And so that lighter harvest amount ought to help us compete throughout the rest of the year better than we did, say, the previous 12 months.
And then give us the last update on the corn basis before we switch gears and head into soybeans.
Sure. Corn basis is actually about as average or normal as it could possibly be when we compare it to the past 10 years. We go by our national DTN National Corn Index, which was $4.14 on Wednesday night. That's 21 cents below the March futures. So on a national basis, looking at the average corn price around the country, we're 21 cents below the March contract, and that just puts us right in the middle of our 10-year history. So it's doing well in that sense. And when I look at the basis, I have to think maybe the current prices on the board are overdone to the downside, because we do have a pretty decent demand situation going on.
Okay, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about soybeans. Give us the top line world stocks numbers out of USDA today.
Yeah, in soybeans, the world soybean stocks from USDA were increased from 114.6 million metric tons up to 116 million metric tons. And that was a little more than expected, by the way. And as soon as I saw the increase, I saw that the beginning stocks were increased almost 2 million metric tons. So whenever you see a jump in the beginning stocks, you know that a revision was made to an earlier year. This one happened to be pretty easy to track down. USDA went back to last year's crop, soybean crop in Brazil, and they increased it from 160 to 162 million metric tons. Now, keep in mind the 160 million metric tons was already a record high level of production for Brazil. So 162 takes it up just that much more. That one change alone basically accounted for the increase in today's soybean stocks number. But of course, I haven't talked about the current season's estimates yet, and that's what everyone's attention was on those estimates. They did not change for Argentina or Paraguay. Brazil had the only change of the day in the crop estimate, and it was just lowered slightly from 157 down to 156 million metric tons. Again, that's quite a bit higher than what CONAB is saying. They came in this morning at 149.4, which is close to 5.5 billion bushels. So we're still talking about a lot of soybeans, Sarah, but there definitely has been some weather damage to this crop this year.
So I'm curious, for maybe both of these numbers, where the expectation is maybe USDA is high to CONAB's estimates, does that give you more of a sense that this is somewhat of a neutral or even a bullish report? Or are we still, in your mind, in kind of bearish territory when it comes to looking at kind of the overall global stocks picture at the moment?
I'd say that this February report, in terms of expectations, was largely neutral, but the market environment itself is still quite heavily bearish for all three crops. And that's going to be our real tough challenge in 2024. Is can we find anything to give traders hope to start buying again? Right now, it's a very tough scenario. And so far, the specs have been rewarded for lower prices all through the month of January and now here in early February. And as long as they get rewarded on the short side of the market, they're going to stay there.
Maybe springboarding off that, what's going on in Brazil right now, talk to us a little bit about soybean exports and the China picture in particular. Where is USDA think the export picture is at the moment?
Yeah, I wish, Sarah, I could say that our only concern is Brazil, but actually this year it's also China. One of the things I showed in our webinar here on Thursday was a chart of China's soybean meal prices. And what we see is that right before Christmas time, they broke to a new three-year low, and they've fallen sharply here in the last 6 weeks or so. That's not good news coming from the world's largest buyer of soybeans, because typically it's soybean meal that drives the demand in China that they have for buying their soybeans. We have not seen a long-term break in the market like this since 2014. So it's not something that happens very often. We've had rumors of problems with China's economy for the past couple years, but I was able to ignore them because I could keep seeing that the soybean demand coming out of China was still very strong. Unfortunately, that's not the case this year. And so in addition to a big harvest from Brazil and Argentina, we also have what looks like a pretty strong possibility here that demand is going to be slower in China in 2024. And that does not bode well for the soybean price.
And I have to ask, again, a thing we've been talking about for many months here on the podcast is just the tightness of the stocks picture for soybeans. It feels like we have so rapidly turned from the tightest stocks on record for such a long period of time to concern that we might be oversupplied. Do you have thoughts or reflections on that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It doesn't seem that long ago. I was at Husker Harvest in September talking about what a bullish window of opportunity that we had for soybean prices. And basically at that time, I was saying the next several months before Brazil's harvest gets here, and yet to turn around and see soybean prices break the way they did. And then when they broke in early January, that was much sooner than expected. And I think just threw out a lot of red flags that even though we had concerns about the weather situation in Brazil, this market was becoming more bearish than we realized it would. And you're right, it happened very quickly.
We're also, we're February. The next time we'll talk will be March. Predictions about planting will be on their way. When you look at these prices and the kind of market situation, in particular for soybeans, but also for corn, are you worried about how the state of the market right now might be playing into growers' decisions on planting for 2024?
Yeah, and we've got a lot of messes in that soup pot. I don't know, that's a bad analogy, but there are many factors making it even more difficult to estimate planting this year. And just to start off, I'll say, if you recall a year ago, one thing we did have in our favor is that prices were so high in the February average that when you looked at crop insurance premiums, even if you got 80 or 85% protection, that it was a pretty good protection level to give you confidence to go out and plant corn and beans. And in fact, I think that's a big reason farmers went out and planted almost 95 million acres of corn, because they had such strong protection on the crop insurance levels. This year, our February averages are going to be much lower than they were a year ago. We're not going to have the same encouragement to run out there and plant as much as you can. There's going to be a big risk in the market. And I think there's a lot of concerns that it's going to be tough to get a profitable pricing opportunity in 2024. So that's one big difference from last year. The other thing is, you may have just heard the other day that there's a ruling from a federal court in Arizona that basically is canceling the registrations for dicamba. And I think one source mentioned that there's maybe 40 million acres worth of dicamba related product, and this is soybeans and cotton, but sold at this time. And right now, it's not clear if farmers that are holding the dicamba and the seeds that go with it are going to be allowed to plant that this year. So what a mess that might add to the corn-soybean mix and guessing acres coming up. So it's, as I say, it's a bit of a mess. And I think it's going to be a little tougher than usual to guess just what the corn and bean acres are going to be in 24.
Talk to us about the crush situation, maybe an upside there where there maybe isn't on the export side.
Yeah, the one good thing, and that has just been steady and consistent and positive for soybean demand, has been the crush situation. And I just have to repeat again that it's largely due to the new market for soybean oil being used to make renewable diesel. Now, the value of crush products have come down substantially from the levels they were at this summer, but also so has the soybean price. So overall, we still have a very profitable crush incentive when it comes to looking at the crush value of beans versus the cost of the soybean. And the most recent report from USDA showed that if you crush a bushel of soybeans, you should be able to get $14.58 from that. And this is for the state of Illinois, by the way. But it's a measure of the value of the meal, the bean oil, and the soybean hull. And $14.58 is roughly $3 above where our cash average cost is in the country for soybeans right now. So as I say, that's a big spread, and that will continue to encourage crush demand. And that's the one piece of good news that we've got to hang on to in what looks like an otherwise very tough year.
And what has all that meant for the soybean basis at the moment?
The basis, like corn, is roughly, I would call, normal or average compared to the last 10 years. Maybe a little, if we had to get a little more specific, it's maybe slightly below average, but at 54 cents below the March contract, the soybean basis is doing fairly well given the more bearish concerns that we have moving forward.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about wheat. Give us the big numbers that came out in terms of global stocks production. Where are we at in the wheat picture?
Sure. For world wheat ending stocks, USDA actually reduced those a little bit. Last month, they were at 260 million metric tons. Now we're down at 259.4. So it wasn't a big change. But the world ending wheat stocks did come in slightly lower. I really don't have any big changes to point out. Maybe the most important one, USDA increased its estimate of world wheat demand by just over a million metric tons. That was probably the most noteworthy change of the day. We did see a slight increase in the crop estimate for Argentina. That was harvested a while ago, and a slight reduction in the crop estimate for the European Union. That crop is currently dormant. And the other noteworthy thing to point out for wheat, and this also goes for corn, is that USDA slightly increased the export estimates for Ukraine. And that points to a bit of good news that, at least for Ukrainian producers, that they've really taken control of that western side of the Black Sea and have done a much better job in shipping out their grain products than I think any of us thought they could. So they've done very well the past couple months with that, and it looks like they have a more stable export situation right now.
Talking about maybe that USDA increase in global demand, I'm curious whether Ukraine was going to be half my question, but the other half is elsewhere in global conflicts. Is that part of USDA's demand picture at this point? Is there expectation that there's going to be supply chain disruptions or need for more food, grains in certain parts of the world? I'm curious where the kind of wheat demand picture is and what's driving a very small change, but a change.
Yeah. I think as far as wheat producers go, they would all chime in and say, well, we could use more of that demand change because right now the demand is really in the tank. And in fact, aside from today's report, today's U.S. wheat prices got hit pretty hard. The Kansas City contract was down 17 and a quarter. We saw a new 2-year low made in the price of French milling wheat. That's always not a good sign and speaks volumes about what's happening internationally. One thing about USDA's report here today is that it does not specifically show what country or region the demand increase necessarily came from. I can tell you that China's demand estimate was unchanged, but it must be a collection of countries that are not put on this WASDE report, because nothing obvious showed up in the numbers today.
And check us in on the wheat basis numbers. Is that in a similar place as corn and soybeans, or is the picture different for wheat?
Sadly, it's much worse. When we compare the wheat basis today, which is 55 cents under the March contract, that's the third weakest basis that we've seen in the past 10 years. So it goes along with that poor demand picture. And, you know, I guess the best thing maybe we could say for wheat right now is that it does seem to still have a shot at its export estimate. USDA did not change that today, but overall, the demand situation for wheat has I tell you, Russia has just sucked the oxygen out of the room. And I'm very concerned that Russia is doing to Western wheat producers what China did to solar market and solar panel producers in the West. They're just destroying this market.
Let's make a quick stopover in the livestock markets. It looked like there was maybe the most positive news of the report for livestock. Give us kind of an update on what USDA had to say about cattle markets.
Yeah, sure. If you've been paying attention to prices lately, we've really zoomed back from that harsh sell-off that we saw in the fourth quarter. And just this week, April cattle are up roughly another $3. And I understand, just talking to Shaylee earlier this afternoon, and she said the feeder index made another big jump higher here on Thursday. So the demand for calves that we're hearing around the country is very, very strong. And it, of course, a lot of it stems from the January 31st inventory report, which came out and showed low levels of every major category of cattle you could have, including the number of calves. But also just the reality of the situation that available supplies are tight and everybody knows it. So in that extremely bullish atmosphere for cattle, USDA came out today and they, I'd say modestly increased their price estimates for steers in the first quarter up a dollar, up $3 in the second quarter, up $2 in the third quarter. And for the fourth quarter, they held off and lowered it a dollar. But basically in the second and third quarter, they're looking for $180 on the price of steers. And obviously, it may be a situation where USDA has to end up chasing the market. We'll have to see how this plays out. But this just seems to be a very legitimate situation of where there's only so much inventory. There's not much you can do about it in the short run. And frankly, the economy's fairly good and strong in the sense that most people still have jobs and our employment levels are still near record highs. So as long as people are going to work and getting paid, the demand ought to hold up pretty well.
That's actually a great segue into thinking about kind of domestic markets and news beyond today's WASDE that could be affecting domestic markets. It seems like we have seen a lot of good news recently. You mentioned the employment figures. It seems like overall markets seem happier now than they've been in much of the last 6 or 8 months. I'm curious how you're watching kind of domestic market news right now and whether there's anything you're keeping an eye on in terms of potential wild cards or monkey wrenches that could end up derailing things in the next few months.
Sure. Of course, I mentioned that I watched the employment stats very close, and that's part of the good news that doesn't seem to be changing or has been discouraged by the high interest rates. I'd say a survey of the S&P 500 companies, basically just about all those companies are showing positive returns on assets, which is a good situation to be in. One of the things that has really made me optimistic about inflation rates coming down and showing the improvement they've shown is that we've seen U.S. energy production return since COVID, and we finally hit our record levels again, and we're producing once again a record amount of oil week by week, 13.3 million barrels a day in this latest report this week. And we need that energy production to return to bring down those prices. And I'm not just talking about energy prices, but all consumer prices. That's how important that is. And that's been the good news. But the boogeyman that I'm concerned about are still the tensions in the Middle East. And more specifically, this increasing tendency of Iran to become more hostile and act out more aggressively in different parts of the Middle East. That's a looming concern, and I think it's not a good sign to see them so eager to stick their neck out in different areas. And I guess that's obviously, if anything flared up or escalated in the Middle East, it's going to be very difficult to keep that oil price down, even though thankfully, because we do have a higher level of energy production now, we're in a more stable place here in our country and not beholden to OPEC or anybody else.
And speaking of worldwide news that is maybe going to affect us closer to home in the next little while, I'm curious how you're looking at the weather picture. We heard from John Brannick at the end of last year, and we're watching the El Nino, La Nina fluctuation potentially happening in the next few months. You've talked about Latin American weather, like the water levels in the Panama Canal have been a big concern over the last month or so. Talk to me about how you are tracking weather right now and what things you're on the lookout for that might change conditions or affect markets in the next few months.
Sure. I think I'll start at the bottom and work my way up. So in Argentina, they've just come off of a dry, hot stretch of about 2 or 2.5 weeks of weather that set their crops back a bit. But the forecast for the next week and more ahead looks like very good rains returning again. So overall, I'm not too concerned that Argentina is going to have anything other than a good crop and definitely a nice rebound from last year's drought limited crops. There's just nothing scary about Argentina at the moment to me anyway. It seems like they're in good shape. In Brazil, the corn numbers we got just this week from the private firm AgRural suggested that 26% of the safrinha crop is planted already. So that's a double-edged sword. I think it's partly because the early soybean harvest was so bad that they were able to work through it quickly and get the corn planted quicker. But on the other hand, it really helps that safrinha crop to get planted early in February and make the progress that they're making now, because it gives it more time for that crop to develop in the rainy season before conditions turn drier normally in late April or early May. So it looks like Brazil is probably going to have a good start to their safrinha crop the way things look right now. And then you mentioned Panama. I just noticed today our seasonal forecast from DTN shows typically the rainy season comes back to Panama in May, but it looks like they're going to have above normal rainfall in the month of April. That might be helpful. And I think their current limit of ships per day is 24. It would be nice if any moisture returned and they got the lake level up where they could increase that ship level, but may not happen until May or June. But it would be nice if those April rains would show up the way DTN is forecasting right now. And then for our U.S. Midwest this coming year, the good news right now is that for most of the Midwest, and I'm sorry, Eastern Iowa, because I know you're stuck with that extreme drought that's just not going away easy, but a lot of the Corn Belt has seen pretty dramatic soil moisture improvement. So it does look like we're set up for a decent spring planting situation across most of the Corn Belt. And we'll have to see how that plays out. As you say, we're going to be transitioning probably sometime in April or May to La Nina. And the concern that John Brannick has expressed is that if La Nina returns the way it looks like it's going to this summer, then maybe once again, the Western Corn Belt is going to have a tough time with a hotter, drier situation. But he did say the Eastern Corn Belt will probably be in good shape. So it's the same old thing that we've seen the last few years. And we'll just have to see as we get closer how those forecasts play out.
You can read Todd's full analysis and catch up on up-to-the-minute reporting on all things ag markets at dtnpf.com or in the monthly DTN Progressive Farmer magazine. Plus, to watch Todd's monthly WASDE webinars live on the day the WASDE drops, head over to dtn.com/resources to register. This episode of Field Post was brought to you by the team at DTN Progressive Farmer, with special thanks to Todd Holtman. This episode was produced and edited by me, Sarah Mock, with support by Greg Hillier and Susan Payne. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, remember, the future of farming is here. This episode is brought to you by DTN Hay Timer. Hay and forage quality isn't just about yield. It also relies on the perfect weather window to ensure a good crop. Use DTN Hay Timer, part of MyDTN, to quickly assess risk by viewing maps specifically designed to show circumstances affecting hay quality. Pennsylvania producer David Graybill said, quote, "Other weather forecasts were not accurate enough. As DTN Hay Timer shows, it takes the right combination of drying to preserve the crop. I would guess we lost 3 to 4 times the value in crops that it would cost us to keep our DTN subscription for the year. DTN Haytimer is part of the MyDTN platform. Visit mydtn.com to start a free 14-day trial.